Hi, this is George from Chicken Wizard Dice, and you're listening to Tale of the Manticore.
The following podcast is intended for a mature audience. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome back to Tale of the Manticore, Season 2. Like the creature from which it takes its name, Tale of the Manticore is a mashup, a crossbreeding between two different species of storytelling. Here, you will find the unpredictability of old-school RPG paper and dice games with the storycraft of a dark fantasy novel. No character is sacred, and no character will be spared if the dice decide their fate is at hand. According to lore, the tail of a manticore is barbed with cruel iron spikes. There will be much pain in the days ahead. Last time, on Tale of the Manticore. Chapter 65 starts with the party members scattered throughout Whitestone Castle and recounts their experiences during their panicked flight from the Eth-Hound, starting with Jace. He flees up the stairs to the third floor, runs blindly through darkened halls, and finds himself, when the magical fear abates, in the Eth-Hound's lair. Catsbane also runs to the third floor, but he is nowhere near Jace. Instead, he's in the Tower of the Archmages, specifically in Carrick's private room when he returns to his senses. There, he discovers the magical dagger that once failed to save his master in the fight with Azor Azul over possession of the wizard's soul. Shawnee, Yellowfly, and Bazu come together in the King's bedchamber. Among the wreckage in the room, they find Kulfri's magical sword and a keyring. They also find the counterfeit holy symbol from Araness's gambit earlier in the story, but they recognize it for the junk that it is and leave it. When all five PCs reunite in the library, there's a quick discussion about what they should do next. Bazu convinces Yellowfly that they should begin their full search of the castle from the bottom up, and so they head to the dungeon. There's no need to look for it. Shawnee has been imprisoned there several times before, and she already spotted the way in when they first entered the castle. The episode ends with the descent into the dungeon and subsequent discovery of the corpses of Bazu's fellow clerics. In the final cell, they find the body of Araness. Even in death, the High Priestess seems to be trying to tell them something. Chapter 66, Part 1, Day 183, Late Afternoon. Party status: Yellowfly, 33 of 39 hit points. Shawnee, 30 of 30. Jace, 45 of 45. Catsbane, 21 of 21. Bazu, 21 of 21. Spells available. Catsbane has memorized Magic Missile, Invisibility, Mirror Image, Haste, and Slow. Bazu has prayed for Cure Light Wounds, Bless, and Silence 15-foot Radius.
In my heart, I knew that none of them could have survived, but somehow, I suppose that seeing it robs me of even a fool's hope. Oh, this is a terrible tragedy.
Bazu put his face in his hands and wept unselfconsciously. Only Catsbane and Shawnee were with him to offer consolation, as Jace and Yellowfly had left to go cell to cell, counting bodies. After a while, they returned. By then, Bazu's cheeks were dry, and a hard look of resolve burned in his eyes.
I counted 30, I think, anyway,
said Jace as he approached.
It was a little hard to tell.
I got the same on my count, confirmed Yellowfly, coming up behind him. Plus the High Priestess makes 31. Of that number, 22 were female. Doesn't sound like a full count.
I wonder why it was only the men, Shawnee wondered aloud. Do you think it was that thing from the library?
It would have certainly been capable,
supplied Jace.
I don't think so, said Yellowfly. These cells were locked. Even if that thing knew what a key was for, it couldn't have handled one. Also, the first dead body we found was a woman's.
Catsbane nodded. It made sense, even if it provided no answers.
How many clerics were there in your church, Bazu?
51,
Bazu replied automatically.
And of those, how many were women?
I can't say for certain, but 23, including Araness, sounds about right.
Shawnee nodded, She had slept in the woman's dormitory at the Church of the Sacred Flame, and although she had never counted, the number seemed correct, more or less. Yellowfly did a quick calculation.
Well, that means there are 20 unaccounted for.
All men, observed Shawnee, wrinkling her forehead in consternation.
All men,
echoed Yellowfly. He scratched his head.
Unfortunately, I think I know where they must be.
The others were thinking the same thing. There was a door at the far end of the prison that, when they had unlocked it, had opened not to another cell, but to a staircase going down. At the time, Shawnee had told them,
I think Colfrey keeps a torture chamber down there.
During her 3 stays in the prison, once she had learned how to listen, she had occasionally heard screams faintly reverberating up from whatever was underneath, and she had never forgotten the warden's threat that if she ever came back, he would
make sure you find out what's below the common cells.
After she had foolishly flung a penny in his face and bought herself another month behind bars. Ironically, now she was back, and it seemed she would find out after all.
We'll have to go down those steps,
intoned Bazu, confirming what she had feared.
Not yet, said Yellowfly. Look at the priestess's finger. I think we've missed something in our search.
She could be pointing to a loose brick in the wall, where she's hidden something,
ventured Jace.
Why bother to hide something if you're going to point at it?
Asked Yellowfly, but he walked over to the wall anyway and started looking closely at the stonework.
Her other hand shows 3,
said Jace.
3 what?
No idea, said Yellowfly.
Stones, maybe?
The other man had no rejoinder for that, so he crouched down and counted 3 stones up from the floor. There was one that seemed a bit irregular. He pushed it, tried to jiggle it, but it didn't budge. It was mortared solidly in place. There's no need to make a roll here, because there is no hidden compartment in the cell wall. Neither are there secrets to be found on the other side of this wall, in the communal pen, or anywhere else on this level of the dungeon, although the companions will waste time in looking. I mentioned in an earlier episode that, for Whitestone Castle, I would not include secret doors on my map ahead of time. That's because I wanted the chance to discover them along with the PCs. But the dungeons are a special case, because Erinnes does know something about them, and the only question is whether or not the PCs will be able to figure out what that is. Puzzles are tricky with solo play. My DM side knows what Erinnes is trying to communicate, but the PCs don't have all the information. I'll just try to imagine what real players at a table would do in this situation, and play it out in the narrative with that in mind. The companions spent a full hour checking and double-checking every stone that fell in the path of the imaginary line extending from the High Priestess's finger, but to no avail. Eventually, they gave up.
If there's something here, said Yellowfly in a dejected voice, I don't believe we'll ever find it.
They probably could have stopped their search earlier, but as much as the dungeons gave them a feeling of despair, especially Shawnee, there was something even worse about the idea of going down to the lower level. However, eventually, there was nowhere else to look. Yellowfly took the lead this time. In addition to the 2 lamps held by the spellcasters, he had plucked a torch from the prison wall and used it to help light their way. The Silverthorn was sheathed in its scabbard at his hip. Behind him, in single file, came Jace, Bazu, and Catsbane. For dungeon level 2, I'm returning to a mapless approach. In the past, I've described this level as a labyrinth, and I don't think negotiating a maze is something that would work well in an audio-only format. I'll eventually return to the crawl style, I'm sure, but for now, a little less granularity feels right. This also feels like the right time to take a quick break. When we return, we'll find out what the companions discover below the prison of Whitestone Castle.
Hey, this is Sid. I am one of the cast members of Resting Glitchface, as well as the editor and producer. 2081 has been a hell of a year for St. Louis, Missouri. An astral anomaly left a 2-mile radius around downtown, a toxic hellscape, and a massacre at a boxing match left hundreds dead or missing. At the center of it all are the Glitches, a shadow-running team made up of Bianca the Face, aka Eris, Val the Technomancer, aka Binary, Joe the Muscle, aka Collateral, and Jet the Sneak Thief, aka, well, Jet. Some of us are better than others at sticking to a codename. The girls attempt to navigate the criminal elements of the St. Louis streets, all while looking out for themselves, each other, and the people they love.
Chapter 66, Part 2, Day 183, Evening. Party status. The party status is unchanged. They made their way slowly, trying to navigate the maze of halls by always turning to the right. So far, they had passed through a half dozen chambers. None of them were empty. Each was home to some cruel torture device that chilled the blood even to look upon and made the companions grateful that they had barely eaten that day. The first of these was a rack, a rectangular frame like a bed frame with wooden rollers at head and foot to which ropes were attached. These ropes would be tied to ankles and wrists, and the rollers could then be winched, stretching the victim until their joints dislocated. Another invention was one that most of the companions had never seen before, but Yellowfly knew how it worked. He said it was called the Scavenger's Daughter, and that it operated opposite to the way a rack did. It was a simple frame of iron, roughly triangular in shape, with built-in restraints for neck, wrists, and ankles. Once the victim was locked inside, the frame could be folded by the torturer, forcing the victim's knees painfully up and into the body. Given the cobwebs covering it, it had not been in use any time recently. The contraptions became more elaborate and cruel as the companions ventured further. With a few of them, someone had gone to the trouble of adding artistic flair to the design, which seemed particularly ghoulish. The nastiest of these was a helmet made of bronze, with a front made to look like a grotesque human face. The eyes were cut out so the victim's actual eyes would have been visible to their captor. The mouth stuck out like a flute, some 6 inches long, in a way that made it look as though the face on the helmet was whistling. The tube continued inside the helmet and would have been inserted into the victim's mouth. Once the helmet was strapped to the head, the torturer could pour anything down the tube and the prisoner would be forced to ingest it. The age and condition of all of these contraptions somehow made them more horrific. Had they been new, one could tell oneself that they had never been used, but the rust and grime on them suggested 100 tales of suffering. The realization of what one human being was capable of doing to another filled every one of them with despair. Following these chambers were a couple of holding cells. They were located near enough the torture rooms that anyone held in them would have been able to clearly hear the cries and suffering from their fellow unfortunates nearby. Manacled skeletons hung from chains pinned to the walls. One of them had a rat in its ribcage. When Shawnee saw it, she picked a bucket off the floor and threw it, causing the rodent to scurry off and disappear into a hole in the corner.
"This isn't a torture chamber. It's a torture complex," she said, looking sick to her stomach. "I can't wait to get out of here."
The place really was beginning to get to her.
"How many more rooms do you think we'll have to search?"
"Well, I don't know," replied Yellowfly, "but I'll be glad to get away from here as well. Do you need to take a rest?"
"No," she managed. "I'm all right."
Yellowfly had been staring at one of the other manacled skeletons when Shawnee threw the bucket. Now he took one last look at it before leading them out of the room. Ahead they found more of Caulfrey's entertainments. There was a room with an iron chair, another with a flaying post, and finally, a chamber furnished with a table that had been used, not so long ago, for some kind of rat torture. A withered gray corpse laid on the table, with a domed wire cage strapped to its ruptured abdomen. Nibbling the flesh of the corpse's feet were a pair of oily black rats. This was too much for Shawnee, who turned away in disgust. At the movement, the rats scampered away. They vanished into a hole in the wall, as the previous rat had done.
"I don't even understand how this is supposed to work," said Bazu in a thick voice.
"They call it a feast for rats," said Yellowfly. "But I'll spare you the explanation. It's vile."
"How do you know so much about all of these things?"
asked Bazu, suddenly realizing he didn't want to know the answer. Yellowfly made no response, and instead just led his companions into the next chamber. Dramatis Personae. Yellowfly. 3 years ago. Shortly after Yellowfly's promotion, from rank-and-file church member to captain of a small gang, Lord Rabbit had sent him into a part of the Warrens he rarely visited. He was told to look for a brick house with a decorative white owl on the lintel of the front door. He was quick to find it. Half of the structures in the Warrens were shanties made of wood, or else wattle and daub. However, it took a very long time for the door to be answered. After knocking several times, Yellowfly gave up and had turned to leave when the door squeaked open. Now he saw what had taken so long. The man at the door walked not with one, but two canes.
"You must be Yellowfly,"
said the man.
"I've been expecting you. Come in."
Yellowfly entered the small home and followed him to a sitting area by a fireplace. When the man walked with his canes, he looked like a combination of human and spider, Yellowfly thought.
"Congratulations on your new position,"
said the man, maneuvering himself into a chair with difficulty.
No. I require no assistance,"
he said when Yellowfly moved to help.
"Take a seat and be at home."
Yellowfly obeyed. He surveyed the single-room dwelling. By the Warren standards, it was a nice home. There was little in the way of decoration, and nothing in the way of luxury, but it was clean. The furnishings were well made, and nothing was broken. The typical residence around here was filled by a collection of decrepit furniture, scavenged pots and bowls, and often a dog or a pig or a chicken living under the same roof as a family.
"Did Lord Rabbit tell you anything about me?"
asked the man. "No, I'm afraid he told me nothing at all," replied Yellowfly.
"Oh, typical,"
said the other, steepling his fingers over his stomach. Yellowfly saw that they were all crooked and gnarled. Some were shorter than others by a knuckle.
"My name is Trelip. I'm one of the church's white owls. Have you heard of us? We're rare birds, you might say."
Yellowfly shifted in his seat. "A pleasure to make your acquaintance, Master Trelip. I'm afraid I'm not aware of the term white owl, either." He had taken Trelip to be a man of 50 or 60 years when they had met at the door. He realized now that despite the thin gray hair, stooped posture, and sagging skin, Trelip was no more than 40.
"White owls are different from regular owls in more than appearance,"
explained Trelip.
"They don't hoot or screech the way others of their kind do. They are as silent, like the snow."
Yellowfly was not catching whatever abstract idea the other man was expressing, so he sat patiently and listened.
"Colfrey's men arrested me in a raid after a church victory that cost him in reputation and gold. This was a few years back. Anyway, he was angry and wanted to send us a message. So a number of us were accused of being members of the guild. Most were not affiliated with the church in any way. Others were allies, but not members. Three of us, myself included, actually were guild members. They threw the lot of us into the prison under Whitestone. Then, one by one, they took us below. Trust me, Yellowfly. You don't ever want to see what's under that prison."
Over the next hour, Trelip explained in fine detail all that he had suffered. He described and named numerous devices of torture and how they worked. Yellowfly understood that he was receiving this information because now, as a captain, he was responsible for keeping the church's secrets. Knowing which tools their enemies used to acquire those secrets was knowledge worth having. Trelip also shared the method by which he had been able to endure them. "The trick," he said, "was to divide your consciousness in two. Not everyone could do it, but Trelip believed it was the only way."
"By force of will, you may split your own mind. Stand apart from yourself. Once you can do that, it is almost as if you are not the one being hurt."
When Yellowfly asked about his companions, Trelip answered,
"I don't know what happened to the other true guild members they caught along with me. I never saw them again. I assume they died. I survived because Colfrey eventually got bored, concluded I knew nothing, and sent me back to the main prison until one day, they released me."
The news that Colfrey himself had been present during the torture did not come as a surprise. Neither was Yellowfly surprised to learn that the church had provided Trelip with the small dwelling and a monthly pension as a reward for his loyalty. At the end of their conversation, Yellowfly asked if there was any other advice Trelip might be willing to share.
"Yes, there is,"
replied the other man, rising shakily to his feet with the help of his crutches.
"Don't get caught, Yellowfly."
Yellowfly and Shawnee, more than the others, have a lot of emotions to deal with when it comes to this place. So it's fitting that today is a level-up episode for both of them. Technically, the level-up should have happened in the last episode, but I ran out of time, and since it didn't change anything, I decided it could wait. We'll do Yellowfly first. He just made level 8. Naturally, there will be new hit points. On a d8. A 5. Could be worse. His new total is 44. His basic attack bonus and saves all stay the same,
so it's really just the new hit points and potential stat increases for him. Let's see what the dice say. Rolling 4, strength. A 4. Intelligence? A 5. Wisdom? I've got a 3. Dexterity? A 6. 11 becomes 12. No bonuses are given for that, but if he can get just one more increase in the future, he'll be in bonus territory. Constitution? Another 6! Wow, another 11 becomes a 12. As with the dex score, he is 1 point away from a bonus. Charisma? A 5. Well, that's it for Fly. Let's move on to Shanae, who, I can hardly believe it, is now a level 9 thief. She gets a d4 of new hit points. A 2. Plus 1 for her constitution bonus means 3, and her new max is 33. Level 9 for thieves comes with a massive improvement in just about everything. Her basic attack bonus goes from a plus 2 to a plus 5. That alone is huge. But her saving throws also improve tremendously, and of course her thief skills get better too. At this point, Shanae really is a master thief, able to rival the very best in all of Camartine, if not Merith. I honestly can't remember the last time I played a 9th level character. Congrats and well done, Shanae. You've been through a lot, and you deserve this. I wonder if the dice gods will be as generous as the rulebook when I try for stat increases. Let's find out. Strength. A 4. Intelligence. A 3. How about wisdom? Another 3. Dexterity. A 2. Constitution. I've got a 5. And finally, charisma. A 1. Nope, nothing. But I am far from disappointed. Shanae and Yellowfly both had extremely satisfying level ups. Okay, at this point we need to get back to the narrative, because while I was busy rolling dice, Jace has had an idea. Chapter 66, Part 3, Day 183, Evening. Party status. The party status is unchanged, with the exception of Yellowfly, who now has 38 out of 44 hit points, and Shanae, who is 33 of 33.
What if she was trying to point to something on this level?
It was seeing the rats flee into their holes that had given him the idea. What's that? Yellowfly had been lost in thought and missed what his companion said.
What if she was pointing to something on this level?
Jace repeated, pointing vaguely ahead with the tip of his sword. Presently, they were in a narrow corridor with a low ceiling. They all stopped walking. When they did, the light from Yellowfly's torch sputtered, throwing weird shadows like silently flitting bats over their heads. It was possible he was right, they all conceded, though that would imply Aranes had been down here, which was a terrible thought. Now that they did think it, as the High Priestess, it seemed likely she had been, especially as they now had every reason to think the deception with the counterfeit holy symbol had been discovered. Of the 5 of them, only Catsbane had the capacity to show them the direction that Aranes had pointed. The others had lost their bearings after taking so many twists and turns below ground. Catsbane said that they were currently moving generally that way, so Yellowfly continued on and brought them into the next chamber, a rectangular shape of 20 feet by 40. The room was notable in two ways. It was almost bare, and it had no exits. There were no furnishings here, no more awful devices to populate their future nightmares. It was another holding cell, by appearances, with pairs of dangling chained manacles on the wall, all in a row. A quick count determined the room could hold 5 prisoners. Without hesitation, Jace said,
"She had 3 fingers out."
And he once again pointed with the tip of his sword at the 3rd set of manacles. "Let's take a closer look," said Yellowfly, sheathing his sword. The truth is that Aranes was never here. In fact, Culfrey had already been thrown into an oubliette not too far from this room by the time of her capture. Even if he had been able to torture her, he would not have, not with the High Priestess of Siddal. Culfrey was a sadist, but he was not brave enough to tempt divine reprisal. Also true is that there is a secret here, but Aranes learned about it remotely. When she came near the end of her life, having been all alone in her private cell for months, the High Priestess eventually came upon the idea of making a holy symbol out of rags using her rapidly decomposing prison shift. The finished symbol was a crude, pathetic thing. It couldn't have been more different from the medallion of gold she had once worn around her neck. All the same, it worked.
It was through prayer that she maintained her sanity during the endless hours in isolation, unable to help her brothers and sisters. Along with the solace of prayer came the power of divine magic. Erinnes once again had access to her deity. Every day, she cast Protection from Evil upon herself, as well as Bless. One day, she saw a rat in her cell and resolved to memorize the spell Speak with Animals, so she could communicate with it if it ever returned. It was a week before she saw it again, but when she did, she was ready and cast the spell. By then, her food and water had stopped coming, and she was beginning to die. Her first plan was to ask the rat to bring her water, soaked up in another piece torn from her shift. The rat took pity on her and did so. Her next plan was to ask the rat to bring her the key, but this plan failed. The keys were too heavy to remove from their hook, even when the rat recruited others of its kind to help. It was at this point that Erinnes knew for certain that she was going to die in her cell, and so she asked the rat for one last favor, to keep her company so she did not have to die alone. The rat agreed, and during one of their conversations, it told her about the secret in the dungeon below, and how it led to a place so dark that even the rats refused to go there. Yellowfly tugged on the left chain of the third manacled pair. Nothing happened. He tugged on the right. Again, nothing. He tried them both at once, and when nothing happened, he looked at the others and shook his head.
Try the third stone from the floor,
suggested Jace. Yellowfly squatted down, counted up three stones, and tried pushing it in, turning it, pulling at it. Nothing happened. He stood and tried the same with the third stone from the ceiling, again with no result. By now, all of the companions were in the room, searching the walls and floor. It was Catsbane who figured it out. He started at the left and counted three chains, not three pairs, and pulled. As soon as he did, a section of the wall nearby began to recede, with the grinding sound of stone on stone. Thanks for listening to Tale of the Manticore. If you're enjoying the show and would like to help to support it, there are lots of ways to do so. You can recommend the show online or to friends. You can like and repost episode announcements on social media. You can pick up One Shot in the Dark, the Pendulum Worldbuilding Tool, or Encyclopedia Manticorica on DriveThruRPG. And finally, you can rate or review the show in your podcatcher of choice. My thanks to everyone for their support of the show. At this time, please allow me to share one of your very kind reviews. This one was left by Mr. Pizzle on Apple Podcasts. Mr. Pizzle writes, "Man, I'm only a dozen or so episodes in, and this has been astounding storytelling. Good job thus far." Thanks for that great review, Mr. Pizzle. I am delighted that you've discovered the show, and I hope you stick with it. While I'm proud of everything I've made, I can say with confidence that the show only gets better after those first dozen or so episodes in Season 1. By the way, if anyone listening started with Season 2 and wants to go back to the first season after it wraps, this is something you can absolutely do. The order that you listen to the seasons is not that important. Anyway, if you do that, you'll hear me figuring out the show during those first dozen or so episodes. It took a while for me to understand what I was trying to make here. It's a pretty strange concept, after all. At this point, I'd like to take a moment to talk about the great voice talent in this episode. We have returning veterans Andrew Fling and Kevin Berenger playing their usual roles of Bazu and Jace. Also joining the show is a new voice, playing Trillip, the White Owl, is W. Tanner Kay of Paladin Prose. He's got a great YouTube channel, at Paladin Prose, that describes itself as Tokyo's friendly neighborhood dungeon master. And, I mean, really, you had me in Tokyo. Domo arigato gozaimasu to Andrew, Kevin, and W. Tanner Kay. For listeners who'd like to get in touch with me, I'm at Manticore Tale on X or Tale of the Manticore Podcast on Instagram. If you prefer email, contact me at taleofthemanticore@gmail.com. I also keep a blog where I post the show notes and also other RPG-related stuff. You can find it at taleofthemanticore.blogspot.com. The adventure will continue on the next episode of Tale of the Manticore, the story where chaos rules.
We're going to give it another go. It's a bit more zing. Yeah. Ready?
Hello.
Wait till I get through the whole thing. Ready? Hello with a billowing hilltop.
Hello.
Oh dear. Waiting to get through the whole thing.
No, I mean...
I thought that was the whole thing.
The whole thing is hello with a billowing kilt off. Okay. That's the whole thing.
Yeah? Okay. That was right.
That pretty much sums up the show. But if you want to find out any more, you can visit us at www.billowinghilltop.com. Is it com? Does anybody know?
.org.
Is it?
It's .com.
What do we do? What do we play?
There's monsters.
Does anybody remember?
Walking around.
We don't know.
And, yeah.
And we will be delighted if you were to join us around our table as we play Dungeon... Is it 5th edition? Hello?
Yeah, we think so. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. We play Dungeons & Dragons...
Sorry, that was me.
What was that noise in the background? There will be noises in the background as we play Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition through the classic Paizo adventure path, The Age of Worms. You can expect this.
No!
Quite a bit of this.
I'm completely lost.
This.
Bleh.
This.
I've got a bugbear in my underpants.
And one of these.
Oh dear.
We're on Apple Podcasts and we're on Spotify and we're on TuneIn and you can find us on Twitter and you can find us on Facebook. And we hope you join us. Thanks very much.